July 13, 2021, it's the Walk for Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro Show. Happy Tuesday. We started off John Coltrane, Miles Davis doing Half Nelson. Speaking of which, we lost Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff yesterday. After that, Thomas DiMuzio with Inherent Power and the Space Between, which, not by any coincidence, is the reason why I'm not totally man alone. Brother Matt's still at the Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point in quarantine, but because of those Estonian software engineers with their scat invention. I got Thomas DiMuzio.
Welcome. What's up, Mike?
Yeah. Where are you talking to me from, the city?
From San Francisco, yeah. The sunset covered in fog.
Oh, the Avs and stuff?
The Avenues, yeah.
Yeah. I've been there. That, like, the street signs have Chinese writing, some of them.
Yeah, they do. Indeed.
And it's only like a couple miles away from all this hustle bustle. It's so calm. And there's like garages with driveways.
That's right. It feels a little suburban here in the city.
Right. And a couple miles south of that is where Brother Steve ended up living in Pacifica, which is like a whole other world away, but it ain't that far.
Just down the
right.
Street.
PCH, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's get into your journey through music. Oh, we got to thank the Brutal Sound Effects crew for the connect. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, big time.
Okay, please bring the earliest music recollection you got.
Oh, the earliest music recollection, man. Like as in hearing music or playing it?
Yeah, or just any kind of memory. No, because especially when you're real little, you ain't playing yet, but you might have a musical experience. Now, it's a Watt for Pedro show, so there's no hard questions and there's no wrong answers.
Cool. Well, I remember as a kid, you know, hearing music on the radio. A couple of the songs that stood out was Ode to Billy Joe.
Oh, yeah.
Up, Up and Away in My Beautiful Balloon. These are not influences. These are my first, you know, the first songs I remember playing.
Very melody oriented. Probably AM radio.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, AM gold.
And what was this? The area, was it where you are now?
No, I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Okay, home of, you know, I think the Fifth Dimension, maybe some of them were from there or something, maybe. I know somebody
really?
Worked with them that played rhythm guitar for him, and he was from there. And great bass man, Paul Chambers, and Mr. Roy Brown, too, I think. Pittsburgh's got some good stuff. And Mr. Tom of... these days with Black Moth Super Rainbow Tobacco. Great. In this pad you grew up, was there musical instruments?
Well, not at first, but when I was a wee tyke, probably around 4 or 5 years old, we did get a piano, and my mom played piano, which is why we got a piano. But she grew up, you know, with piano lessons and all that, so she could read music and you know, pretty much play pop songs and things like that. When we got a piano, I kind of migrated towards it.
Now, what was like you just jumped on, or did you have to go through the lessons thing too?
No, I just jumped on. In fact, my grandparents had a piano before my parents got a piano. So there are photos of me in a little bunny suit, you know, at 3 years old, you know, sitting at the piano, you know, playing with one finger or whatever. I kind of like, you know, I don't know. I was migrating towards that instrument. And once we did get one, I continued with my maybe two-finger technique. And, you know, it all started then and there, I believe.
What, was it kind of percussive?
Well, at the time, I'm not even sure what it was. I was probably just, you know, messing around, hearing, you know, what the notes are and, you know, figuring out, you know, just what to do. I would hear my mom play, so I would try to, you know, play little songs and write little songs as a kid.
Oh, wow. So, you're already trying to compose. That's great.
Yeah. By the time I was in like third grade, you know, I had already had a couple songs under my belt. I used to play them for my friends. They kind of rock.
Okay. And, you know, rock and roll actually is from piano. And actually, before that, with the swing bands, piano was in the rhythm section. That's why I asked you about the percussive thing. Because so was the guitar. It was We were all in the rhythm section if you weren't the horns or strings.
That's true, right.
Yeah, it's trippy how things kind of change. Okay, you mentioned second grade. Can I ask you about school? Were you in the choir, the marching band, or shit like that?
Well, I wasn't in the choir or the marching band. I did wind up in the school band. We didn't march.
but a concert band or something, right?
Concert band. Yeah, I think it was third grade. And I asked my parents, you know, I wanted to play drums.
Ah.
And my parents came back with a clarinet.
Licorice stick. Easier to carry.
Yeah, it didn't quite work out the way I'd hoped, but turns out they needed clarinet players. So
right.
I guess my parents, you know, were like, okay, they're a little quieter than the drums, so we'll do that.
Actually, there was a period in music like Artie Shaw, and I mean, it was an upfront instrument.
It was, yeah. It's kind of funny. The first thing I tried to do when I got my clarinet was play chords.
Wow.
I'm like, why doesn't this thing play two notes at the same time?
I think you can, because on a sax, like John Coltrane, if you overblow, you can get some overtones.
You can do the multiphonics.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Absolutely. Yeah,
but
that's
maybe
really
as a kid, that's kind of tough.
Yeah, that's some advanced techniques for a third grader.
Can I ask you what record, the first record you bought with your own money?
The first record I bought with my own money was actually Cheech and Chong. The record with Basketball Jones on it.
I think it's the Wedge record.
I love that song as a kid.
Hey, don't laugh, because me and D. Boone listened to those motherfuckers like over and over till we had them all memorized.
Right? So it was funny, you know, I'm sitting there laughing at Basketball Jones, but there are all these drug references. Once my mom got wind of it, she went and took the record back and exchanged it for the Monster Mash LP.
Oh, wow. Boris Pickett.
Yeah, Bobby Boris Pickett. But with my
a Boris Karloff voice.
That's right. And the Crypt Kickers 5.
That's right. That's right. Good memory.
But with my first, my own money, it was definitely Stevie Wonder, Songs in the Key of Life.
Ah, I think that's one man band record.
Such a great record.
Yeah.
Yeah, just incredible.
It also had a weird kind of synthesizer, I found out later. The Inner Vision, there's three of them. These guys, two guys from England, right? Tonto's Expanding Headband or some shit.
Yeah, exactly. Malcolm Cecil and I think Robert Margoloff.
For a little bit, it was at the Mutado, you know, the Mark Motherbow and Jerry had a place, or still do, on Sunset Boulevard, and it was there, but I think it's back in England now.
That's amazing. Yeah, what a machine that is.
It's like a whole room, right?
It's like a whole room, yeah. You're surrounded by the instrument itself. It's pretty cool.
Okay, and the first gig you went and saw?
Gig was Heart. And
Joe
Perry. Yeah,
okay.
1980.
Wilson Sisters.
The second gig, though, was just monumental. I went to see Queen, and we were up in the rafters, and me and my buddy went down to the front of the stage after the first act played. We got the first row center stage. There were two empty seats, and we sat there the whole show. I mean, I was like leaning on the stage, you know, right in front of Freddie's mic stand.
Well, that weird kind of mic stand, it was kind of little, right?
Yeah, but it was amazing the next day. Like, I used to call and pester the DJ at WDVE in Pittsburgh, and we became friends. And so the next day we went and had lunch with the DJ, Mac, and we were like, Max, man, we went and saw Queen. We were in the first row, you know, center stage. He's like, Tom, you were in my seats, man. And he actually had the tickets with him and the backstage passes,
wow.
And he gave them to us the next day. We were sitting in his seats.
Wow. Why? What? He didn't make it? He was sick? Or?
He was like, you know, the DJ and the primetime DJ in Pittsburgh. So, you know, he got tickets to all the shows.
Oh, it was, yeah.
He just didn't go. You know, it was one of those nights or whatever.
But he was like kind of on the permanent list because, yeah, you want airplay, so you want the DJ. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
They could have called it payola or anything like that.
Right, right. But, man, what an experience that was.
Yeah.
I mean, to be there up front and, you know, with a band like Queen was incredible.
I saw the Keep Yourself Alive. Sheer Heart Attack or something. I saw with Motha Hoople, I think.
Oh, man. Nice.
Except the gigs, you were so far away. Except you were right up front. But
It's like we're way up in the rafters. We're just like, let's just go down there and see what we can.
Yeah, it was the bum rush.
It's really great.
I want to play this. You gave me the Scanners.
Thank you.
Not talking about graduating, but in the afternoon, garage band, basement band, bedroom band with your buddies?
Yes, but that didn't happen until high school, basically.
Okay.
I mean, I had a couple, like, you know, in grade school, actually, I did form a little trio that I called Black Ice that we had one session. It was saxophone, trumpet, clarinet, and snare drum.
Whoa.
I'd written out an arrangement for Fleetwood Mac's The Chain.
Oh, man. Well, how did it go down?
Well, we were a bunch of kids, so we wound up just like yelling and screaming and running all around and probably jumping all over each other.
All right. Kind of success.
Well, yeah.
So by the time you're in high school and you're doing these after school bands, what are you on? Are you on piano?
Yeah, well, at first, unfortunately, I was on piano, an actual piano, because I didn't have a keyboard.
Okay. Tell people, they used to be really expensive.
They were. Then you had to get an amp, too.
Right,
so
right.
It wasn't just, a keyboard. It was a number of things. But I used to put the recorder close to the piano so I could, so it would pick up. But none of the other guys could hear it. But eventually I did get a keyboard for Christmas, a Wurlitzer 200A, when my freshman year of high school. And that's when it really started. That's when the after-school bands, like, really came together. First as cover, but then as originals.
Ah, okay. So you're writing for the band on the piano, on the keyboard.
Yeah. And it's funny, when we were doing all the covers, I swear, I was picking a lot of the songs. None of them had keyboard. And, playing, like, Black Sabbath and,
I think Tony Iommi's playing, his rhythm guitar anyway, is kind of like a weird kind of organ.
He is.
Totally. A little bit of blues, but in a way it's this weird kind of gothic organ.
Songs like
Electric Funeral and, Iron Man and stuff. It's very trippy music. And we didn't know how they got the songs. We didn't know about fuzz pedals.
Yeah, right.
Everybody now knows about pedals and shit, but in those days, man, we thought it was some studio trick.
That's right. Yeah. Amazing.
So it's funny. Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, when I got the piano, I got a bunch of records too for Christmas, and I suggested them all to my parents, and one of them was Paranoid. So I'll never forget, putting the needle down on side one of Paranoid and hearing War Pigs.
Oh, yeah. So,
never forget that moment, and that's one of the reasons why.
Also, a lot of good device and drama, econo, like just hi-hat moves and a whole step interval thing for, like a blues thing kind of, but just really smart. And then that thing at the end, Luke's Wall.
Oh,
actually,
sure.
The intro, I used that rhythm to do my version of Funkadelic's Maggot Brain.
Oh, wow.
Ba-boom, 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 ba-boom. That weird kind of kick drum pattern for the bass,
Yeah.
I thought they were very innovative guys. And I found out in interviews later they were very influenced by Cream. Especially
nice.
The drums and the bass. But, okay, so you're rocking the keyboard. So that's all right. Rock and roll comes from keyboards anyway, so it's strange about music and anything human, really. Did this band have a name?
Well, we had about 50 names, crazy. One was called The Possessed, another was Antichrist, and this was a cover band, called Antichrist. Then we were Spitfire, and then this DJ in Pittsburgh, his name was Maximum. Yeah. We named the band Maximum because I'd call him up all the time, and he'd play my request. I'd record it, then our band would figure it out, And I did mention to him, hey, man, we named our band after you. We're called Maximum. And it's kind of funny because he knew I was having some trouble with algebra class. And he told me that if I passed my algebra class, I could come down to the station and be a guest DJ on a Saturday night.
Wow.
So I got a tutor and I passed with a D, and he held his word and he had me down to the station. And so that was just a real great experience.
Same Max who had the two seats at the gate?
Yeah, same Max. Oh. Yeah. Same guy.
Okay. The lesson there, people, don't burn your bridges. You never know.
That's right. Man, this guy was so influential at the time. It was really cool. The funny thing is, when I was on the radio as a guest DJ, he's like, well, Tom, tell the world the name of your band. And I was like, Warlocks. And he's like, yeah, Warlocks. I didn't even realize he was waiting for Maximum.
You had already changed the name of the band again.
50 times, yeah.
Tell me about, what was the last name you guys settled on?
Well, I think it was Warlocks, actually, and what happened.
Warlocks, like the Grateful Dead, right?
Kind of like the Grateful Dead,
What was the first Warlocks gig like? Or was it just a practice band?
It was just a practice band. What would happen is the drummer wanted to play football, so the band broke up, and then I went and joined another cover band, and then one day that cover band merged with the other cover band, and I was out of the equation.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, and that's what really started original music for me. You know,
the circumstance.
Yeah, it was a weird circumstance. You know, a high school thing.
I know. It's a lot of peer pressure and shit.
Yeah.
Pecking order, hierarchy. God, at least you were on keyboard. Just think of you were a bass guy.
Right.
They were like, that was like right field in Little League.
Sure. Yeah, I was more in left field. But yeah, once we got the cover band together, we were kind of short-lived as well. We never played a gig. I mean, we were just, you know, 15 years old and all that. But we were called Psy Chameleon. And and then another project that came after that actually is where I started to get into improvisation.
Oh, so this is very important, right? Yeah.
So important. Yeah. And, you know, group improv, and that just was life-changing.
Well, did you guys know about Grateful Dead?
Well, not really. I wasn't so much a deadhead.
Yeah, me either. But, in fact, people told me they improvised, and I thought it was just calm music for people that ate too much L, and so they wouldn't lose their marbles.
Right.
I thought, you know, if you want to trip out, you listen to, you know, the Kraftwerk with headphones on.
Sure. Yeah. It was King Crimson that led me to improvisation.
Ah, okay. Wow, but some of that stuff was really structured also.
It is, except when you get to, like, Starless and Bible Black.
Right. John Wetton's bass sound, oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
But then to see pictures of him, he's got, like, body shirt, blow-dry hair, designer jeans. Like, fuck. It's all right, though, because he could sing great, and I just love that bass sound, especially when he toured with Roxy. That out of the blue, oh, my God, dung-a-dung-dung. He played with a pick, you know, and had some kind of overdrive, but it was just such a good.
Yeah, he had a sound for sure.
He really did. He really did.
I hear he bust bass strings all the time.
Probably the attack with that pick was something else.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't think it was like, you know, don't be gentle with me, or please be gentle with me. Yeah, I kind of took it for granted. Later on, I really got into his. He was really also Mr. Fripp. I guess he organized the whole fucking trip. I guess they grew up together, and Greg Lake too, right?
Yeah, I guess so. You know.
Well, we're at the end of the first hour. We're getting more into your journey. It's 13 July. Watt for Pedro show special guest Thomas DiMuzio. Hold tight for hour two. July 13th, 2021. It's the second hour of the Watt for Pedro show.
Oh!
Watt for Pedro show. Started the second hour off. Thomas DiBuzio. Tread Murray. Fathom. Fathom's 6 feet, people. Just talking off air about this. Then we had Ben Salter in Tasmania featuring T. Wilds with Moonshake. All Around a Chicken or a Duck. Nearby Sydney with brother Lucas Abella. Love his stuff. And then something he gave me here, an excerpt. Hayes, Thomas DiMuzio. So, higher education. You leave high school. Do you go do a higher education thing for your music journey?
Well, at first, I wanted to at first for music, but of course, you're kind of conditioned by your parents and even by the institution to choose a career.
Right.
So I did go to college and I tried to take like regular classes, but that didn't work out so well. And, after my first semester, I just, you know, stopped taking things like trigonometry and, English comp and whatever, and just took every music class that the school offered.
And was it worthwhile?
It was, because I knew at that time that I was going to get out of there. It was a small school called California University of Pennsylvania, wow, which was in the middle of, like, nowhere, and it was an old coal mining town in Pennsylvania that happened to have this university with about 5,000 students.
Can I mention a movie?
Which movie?
Deer Hunter.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, we're talking Deer Hunter territory. Yeah, absolutely. But what was cool
about this
school?
It was just a guess, Tom. It's just a guess.
I found a few people that just, like, stood out, you know, from the rest of the people there. And they were, of course, musicians, and we all bonded over music.
Ah, great.
And my second semester there, I wound up joining a punk band, a hardcore band called 99 Cents.
Right.
And that was a blast. That we actually did gig. Those were my first gigs with 99 Cents. We played the Electric Banana in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I'm sure Johnny and Judy.
Yeah, Johnny and Judy Banana.
Oh, man. I did many gigs there. Minutemen and Fire Hose, yeah. It was on the hill. It was in a weird part of town. It was trippy on that road.
Yeah. It was on stilts, too, to keep
on
it like...
On stilts, right, ready to go. Oh man, that was there. Oh, I got memories of that. So you were playing there. Okay.
Yeah, it was cool.
Well, you guys must have had to drive, right? You went on, did little tours.
Well, you know, it was 90 minutes from California, Pennsylvania into Pittsburgh. So we used to all pile into the guitarist Chevy Chevette, and you know, they bring a bass and a guitar, but you know, I had basically, I was their drummer, and so I played whatever kit was on stage from, you know, any of the other bands graciously lent me their gear.
You didn't own a drum set?
I did not own a drum set.
Damn, how'd you practice?
The way I got into the band was I had a mixing board, and I was friends with these guys, so I was helping them to record their demo. But after a whole day of trying to record, their drummer just couldn't play, had no sense of rhythm, unfortunately. And after he split, I was like, you know, I could probably play those drum parts, man. And I did. And they're like, yeah. And so I was in the band. I felt bad for Tim, who wasn't in the band anymore.
Yeah, I know, you know. Sometimes do session work, and you know you're going over another dude's bass parts. It's like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's just it's a weird feeling. But I think in Holland I learned one door closes, another door opens.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. So it was funny. I didn't have a kit, but, you know, there was a ramshackle kit put together for Tim. And then a buddy of mine, well, a friend that I met through the singer of the band, Lex Luthor, well, a.k.a. Lex Luthor, Bob Mullins, he had turned me on to this drummer. Actually, he's like, hey, this is my friend CJ. Hey, man, can I play your drums? I'm like, sure. He sits down behind this kit, which was a Mickey Mouse drum pedal. I'm not shitting you, man. A Mickey Mouse drum kit. And, you know, it was total punk rock, vinyl tape over all the drum heads. And, you know, and he sits down behind this kit and my jaw hit the floor. I will never forget that memory. This guy was one of the greatest musicians I've ever known.
My pop told me a poor carpenter blames his tools.
Yeah, right. Yeah, tools do not equal talent. That's for sure.
You know how humans get into gear fetish, right? All I need is the right shit and I'll be able to play good. And then, this example comes and shows you bullshit.
That's right.
Right. It's look, you gave me some music here. Themisto?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Themisto. Yeah. It's a moon of Jupiter, or I think.
No, it's Voice of the Eye.
Voice of the Eye. I think that's the moon of Jupiter, Themisto.
Okay.
Yeah.
Watt for Pedro show. That chunk of music started with Famisto, but it could be Jupiter, right? Voice of I and Thomas DiMuzio is what I got. Who I put that together for you. And then we had GX Jupiter Larson with BLM about the Perma Wave 2020. Build the Better Tomorrow comp. Brett Gutzeit out of Milwaukee put this great comp together. A lot of good music. And then finally, Dimmer. This is a project you did. Ascent, part one?
Yeah.
Okay. So what happens after college in California, Pennsylvania, University of California, Pennsylvania, and 99 cents?
I had been cramming there, you know, to learn how to read music for piano. I could read for clarinet, but not really piano. It's tough to read 10 fingers worth of music.
Yep.
I still can't do that stuff. But I was cramming to go to Berklee College of Music, so I did do that. And
in Boston, Massachusetts.
In Boston. And that was amazing, except it was also very eye-opening because I already had a distinct direction I was going with, kind of noise and sound, and Berklee had nothing to do with that. You know, it was all about music theory based on bebop.
Or fusion.
Or fusion, yeah. The fundamentals were bebop, 2-5-1s, you know.
Right, right.
And so it just wasn't the place for me, although I stuck it out for a couple semesters. But it was the people I met there that made all the difference, you know.
So
everybody
connects,
right? Dedicated to music. And that kind of rubbed off in a big way, you know.
And where you go from there?
From there, I just dropped out and stayed in Boston because I kind of preferred the scene there. I mean, it was a lot more happening than Pittsburgh. So I stayed there for about 10 years and, you know, started releasing noise and, you know, the music that I do.
And was this Man Alone? Did you get in any ensembles?
I was not really in any ensembles. This was pretty much solo stuff. I was still improvising with a lot of my friends and just casual jam sessions, but no bands really came together. I tried to get some bands together more in the rock vein. I started playing guitar and, you know, so it was kind of like, you know, Zeppelin, King Crimson kind of influence stuff, kind of tricky time signatures and things. But we never really finished any recordings and, you know, I just kept doing my solo thing. And I didn't even know there was a noise scene or any kind of cassette culture or any of that stuff. I like around 87, my wife used to listen to WZBC, Boston College,
sure.
And at night, they'd play all kind of great music. It was called No Commercial Potential. You hear Nurse with Wound. You'd hear all kind of great, you know, music. I'm like, what the hell is this stuff? And
you never heard of like, Throbbing Gristle?
I eventually heard of Throbbing Gristle.
No, but up to that point you had.
At that point, I didn't really know much beyond the prog rock music scene.
Okay. Think of punk, you know, especially with 80s and stuff, it's always fast guitar. They don't realize 70s punk, they even called it synth punk. Nervous Gender called himself that over here.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it was kind of weird. You know, I called the station, sent him a tape, and one of the DJs wrote back who had a label called Generations Unlimited, and his name was Dave Prescott. And that label put out a lot of Conrad Schnitzler material, Gen Ken, Arcane Device, just a lot of music that I had never heard of, but was kind of like along the same lines that what I was doing. So it was really eye-opening. Suddenly I had that cassette that I sent the station was like being released by the small label. And then next thing you know, they're putting out my first record, which was an LP called Headlock.
Oh, bitchin'. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, July 13, 2021 edition. Watt Pedro Show, special guest, Thomas DiMuzio. Hold tight for hour three. July 13, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt Pedro Show. We'll be right back.
party, missing out on all the fun. I wake up and see you're stuck in the web I spun. While you stare into the void, you're in the line of fire. It's a sad, sad truth, I know what you're looking for. There's gold underneath these hills, that's what they say. We're living in a ghost town, the ground will soon give way. A magical place, thunder rumbles as the trains pass by. A peek inside through the door left ajar. Looks like my spinning head is on the run. But I'm working my way up, you see how far I've come.
Walk for Pedro show. Start off the third hour with Golden Mean. This is Chris Cutler, Thomas DiMuzio, and Fred Firth. And, yeah, both, we're talking the socks on Henry Cow, right? The socks on the album covers?
That's right, yeah.
that's quite a connect. I took your name from Holland with The Door Left Ajar, Ron Ruins. We had Rod Anderson. This is him in Ruins. What did you say? And then finally, another project called Poptastic. Are you happy?
Yeah. Poptastic.
Yeah, enlighten us about the first. What's the connect with the two Henry Cowers?
Well, you know, when Headlock came out in 1989, I sent that record to three. I had worked at a software company, so maybe I did a taboo thing. I had the addresses of some of my favorite artists. I had Brian Eno and John Paul Jones and Chris Cutler. So I sent the record to all three of them, and Cutler wrote back a week later, a two-page handwritten letter saying that he liked the record and wanted to distribute it on his label. And I was just in heaven. So yeah, that established our connection. And a few years later, I get a call from Chuck Vertasik. He was formerly known as Chuck Vertasik. He went by Charles O'Meara, and rest in peace, Chuck. But Alan Ravenstein and Chris Cutler and Chuck were going to the show, and Ravenstein wouldn't come out of retirement.
Wow, but I did see him play together in Paruba where there was Scott Krause, too. It was the two-drummer man version.
Yeah, yeah. So this was 93, I think.
Okay.
And they were trying to get Alan to come out for the show, but he wouldn't do it for whatever reason.
He's been on the show twice. I'm a huge fan of him.
I got to thank him because I got the call.
Oh, to replace him. Okay.
Yeah. And so we played. That was our first show.
Oh, wow.
And then Chris and I continued to play live shows. You know, we've played quite a few, quite many live shows together, and you know, many have been documented on different releases. So that was just a thrill, man. Chris is such a great.
Absolutely, yeah, I love his playing. I'm involved with the recording. He's not allowed to record yet in his situation, but it's with I think Nels Klein and. Matt Waskovich in Cleveland's putting it together, but so I'm playing with him by trading files. But at least a little bit, I get to play with Mr. Cutler. He's incredible.
Fantastic.
Now how do you make it to the port side of the country?
Well, I was working for these software companies, Dr. T's Music Software, in Boston, and Pro Tools comes along really early. And I kind of got suckered into buying Pro Tools at a very young age. Even before it came out, I wound up putting a bunch of stuff on a credit card at 25% interest and just digging into this world of, you know, digital, this new exciting world of digital. And nonetheless, it didn't work. It didn't work for like a year and a half. And I work for Avid now. I actually still work on Pro Tools in my day job. I'm a tester, user abuser. And I tell them what's broke, and then we fix it.
I record with it every day, but I never went past.
Yeah,
I never went past version 11.32.
There's been a few versions, but I'm still running 10 in my studio. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, 10 is great because of the clips.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I eventually wound up moving across the country because of that. There was a company called OSC, our shitty corporation, and they made they actually wrote Pro Tools, half of Pro Tools, way back when.
Sound design, right?
Yeah, it came from sound, it kind of came from sound designer, but Pro Tools was its own new thing. And these guys at OSC, they were kind of contracted by DigiDesign at the time to write Pro Tools. They eventually broke off and did their own thing called Deck 2.
Right.
And that's how I moved out to California. That small company got acquired by a bigger company called Macromedia, and they had the money to actually move my wife and I from Boston to San Francisco. And we haven't looked back since. I never thought I'd wind up on the West Coast, but...
But ain't that trippy about life? You don't know how you end up.
It's amazing. I mean, the music scene in San Francisco or the Bay Area is kind of like a mecca for fringe music, for noise, for avant-garde.
So this is where you needed to be all the time. Didn't know it.
Yeah. You know, in Boston, I played maybe 10 times in 10 years.
Whoa.
Yeah. And there weren't many opportunities to play. Yeah, I'd play in Ron Lassard's basement or something, or Mass College of Art would have event works, you know, each year. And, you know, so the gigs were few and far between. There were almost no gigs at clubs or anything like that. They were all basement shows. And but out here, that changed so quickly. I mean, I think my second gig out here was the 30th anniversary of the Monterey Pop Festival.
Wow, I got to play one of those.
Yeah,
I'm like, what's the call? I think 2005 or 6. We opened up with, it was a bunch of dudes sitting there in sweaters, and we opened up. I said, let's do Stooges. But then the boss liked it. I thought they were all going to fucking throw us off. Speaking of the city, you gave me a tune called Lower Hate.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Black for Pedro Show. Last music for this edition, Lower Hate. And this is, again, an excerpt, Thomas DiMuzio. And then part one of part two, I had to rank this baby up. It gets too big to fit on yesterday's. Jorge Bachman with Dark Bellow. And then finally, I guess you remix this, Isis, but is this the old lady band from the 70s?
No, this is the band.
Younger guys that do hard rock. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
This Holy Tears. Like, Holy Tears.
Yeah, Aaron. Geez.
But there was a band in the early 70s, all women out of the city called Isis. I remember as a teenager.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know
that. Well, I was a teenager. Well, that's why I wanted you on the show, Thomas. So I can't
invite you.
So what do you got going right now?
Right now, man, I just had a record drop a couple weeks ago called LCM. It's a solo record. Came out on Erato Talks Decodings.
Was it composed during this situation?
No. LCM is a space here, kind of an underground space in the Bay Area that puts on noise shows. And they've been doing their thing for about 10 years. So I've taken my shows that I played there, especially my, you know, I got into the Buchla modular synth about 8-10 years ago or so.
Do you have your own?
I do. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Talk about gear acquisition. This is insane, man. I mean, I call it my mod life crisis because, you know, I didn't buy a Harley. I bought a spaceship, man.
Transporter machine.
But it's cool because this record, LCM, for one, you know, it's a great space. You know, on a Monday night, you know, you see 50 people come out to a show or something. I mean, it was a really great. It's, you know, it's still happening, but, you know, what's happening now since the pandemic, we're just getting back into it. But it's nice because I took a bunch of shows from there and kind of comped them into what became this record.
You're saying like the Miles Smiles, like you got a bunch of material and you start cutting it up and make tunes out of it?
Exactly like Miles, the Tio Marcero. I mean, Miles was so visionary in that way, you know, yeah. Like it really opened my eyes when I got the Jack Johnson, the complete Jack Johnson.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right.
You know, because he's putting, when he saw what Tio was doing, or yeah. Maybe they were both doing it, but, you know, with Bitches Brew and In a Silent Way with the sure. tape edits, Miles then embraced that and started building source material from small groups that they then cut together to make these records.
Right, right. Really amazing.
So visionary at the time. That's the way people use Pro Tools, you know, today.
Absolute, absolute, absolute.
And really cool.
Because at the end of the day, the listener, you know, he doesn't know what's going on behind the curtain, that man behind the curtain.
That's right.
So I think everything is fair.
As long as it's compelling and sucks you in, you
absolutely.
Know, it's yeah,
yeah,
it's all
like,
fair.
Yeah, it's got to be. And that's the first rule. You're right, Thomas. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So where can people find you on the internet?
Well, there's the main place would be thomasdimuzio.com.
Let's spell it for people.
That's thomasdimuzio.com. And that's got, you know,
music. Perfect Italian name for a musician.
Yes, indeed. The Muse. Yeah. The Muse, though.
Yeah, love it, love it. Well, from there, you probably got links to go everywhere else.
There's all kinds of stuff there. Then there's Genc.com, Genc.com, which features a lot of my engineering work. I do a lot of mastering work.
Oh, okay.
And did Nels Klein's last record. Fear of the
Okay. And, that means you must have taken care of your ears.
My ears are still good, dude.
Okay.
You know, I bought some earplugs in the early age after I saw a Yes show, which was one of the loudest shows ever. I mean, they really, you know, you think the Swans are loud. Yes was pretty damn loud.
No, you know what? The loudest one for me was Deep Purple. Because John Lord didn't just use Leslie's. He used Marshall's, too.
That's right.
And it's so legato. I mean, there's no holes. It's just his
wall. That's true.
Man, when you get some new music, Will you come back on the show, because we run out of time here, and I'd love to talk to you about your stuff more.
Oh, man, Mike, I'd be honored to do that. And okay. Thank you so much for having me on in the first place.
Yeah, I think next space open is in December.
So sweet, man. Count me in, dude.
You're count on it.
All right.
July 13, 2021 edition of the Wap Pedo Show. Keep your powder dry.